We'll call the Conference Committee on House File 3106 and Senate File 2741 to order. And I think we will start by just going around and introducing ourselves, and then we'll kind of give you a lay of the land here. So I'll start. I'm Carla Bigham. I'm 57A, which is Cottage Grove, South St. Paul, St. Paul Park, Newport.
Tony Cornish, representing South Mankato Brewery, trustee in the Borough County.
John Dawg, State Senate, Bloomington, Burnsville.
Jim Carlson, Senator, Bloomington, Burnsville and Eagan.
Julie Rosen, South Central, Minnesota, five counties.
Nee Moore, the east side of St. Paul.
Steve Murphy, Red Wing, all the way down to Goodview. And Ron, why don't you introduce yourself too?
I'm Senator Ron Latz from St. Louis Park, Hopkins, Golden Valley.
All right, and then staff, Billy, why don't you start?
I'm Billy Wall, Committee Administrator to the Senate Transportation Committee.
Chris Turner, Senate Council of Research.
Ken Becker, Senate Council of Research.
Becky Perius, House Research.
Peter Strohmeyer, House Committee Administrator.
Okay, thank you, and we do have a couple members here. Just, you know, what time of year it is, people running back and forth. So we also have Deb Hillstrom, who's Chair of Public Safety. She's on, I think, two committees at the same time right now, and then Steve Raskowski will be joining us in a second. A little bit of the lay of the land. My intention is to go ahead and have staff do the side-by-side, and then if there is anybody that would either want to add or give a comment on the bill, and then call the recess and let the offers begin, I guess, is how this goes. So with that, if staff wants to start with the side-by-side.
Madam Chair, I will be working off of two documents. The first one is the bill comparison summary for House File 3106, which should be in your packets, prepared by House Research and Senate Counsel. And the other one will be the reviser side-by-side comparison, which is dated May 4th. And just as a quick overview, both these House and Senate files are making changes to administrative revocation periods for DWI offenders. The bills are also amending and making permanent the current ignition interlock program. And certain offenders are going to be required to use an ignition interlock device to drive legally. And since the bills are amending many of the same sections, I'm just going to try to focus primarily on the differences. So section one on the House side is on R1 of the reviser side-by-side. This is a House-only provision. It amends the first-degree DWI crime to include prior felony convictions from another state in conformity with Minnesota's law. Section 2 on the House side and Section 1 on the Senate are identical provisions. They're on page R1. Under this provision, a judge is not required to impose mandatory penalties for non-felony DWI violations if the judge requires ignition interlock as a condition of probation. Section 3 on the House side is on R2. This relates to test refusal. It amends the license revocation periods that apply under the implied consent law for test refusal. Current law provides for a one-year revocation, and this will create a graduated revocation period based on the number of prior DWIs, and they range from from 1 to 6 years. The Senate Section 2 is nearly identical, but it provides for a fixed one-year revocation period for first-time offenders, and the House provides for a not less than one-year provision. Section 4 on the House side is on R3. This increases and restructures revocation periods for test failure. The House is increasing all the revocation periods except for first-time offenders with a BAC, or blood alcohol concentration, of less than 0.20. The Senate side, Section 3, is similar. The House is leaving the BAC that triggers the longer revocation period at 0.20, while while the Senate lowers it to 0.15, and you'll see this in other places throughout the bill. Also, the Senate is applying the same revocation period to persons with second DWI offenses within 10 years or a third, and the House is applying a lower one-year period to second-time offenders with a BAC of less than 0.20. Moving to Section 5 on the House side, it's on page R4. In this section, the House is increasing all of the revocation periods for a conviction, except for first-time offenders who fail the BAC test. The Senate, in addition to not increasing test failure for first time, they're also not increasing the revocation for first-time test refusal. And then the Senate is also applying the same revocation period for a second-time offender, regardless of their blood alcohol concentration, whereas as was done in the previous section, the House is differentiating between second-time offenders with a BAC above or below 0.20. Section 6 on the House side is on R5. This is amending the revocation period if a person under the age of 21 is convicted of a DWI. Current law provides the revocation period is for 6 months. The House is amending this provision to state a period of not less than 180 days, whereas the Senate is keeping 6 months and is not using the language not less than. Moving to Section 7 on the House side, this is also on R5. This is increasing the revocation period to 1 year for first-time DWI offenders with a BAC of 0.20 or more. The Senate Section 6 is similar, but it is lowering, again, the BAC standard to 0.15. Section 8 on the House side starts on the bottom of R5, but most of it's on R6. This section, House Section 8 and Senate Section 7, are amending certain rehabilitation requirements for persons whose driver's license have been canceled or denied. It's creating 3 verification periods based on the number of prior DWI violations. So it will be 3 years for a third violation within 10 years for a fourth violation, 4 years for a fourth violation in 10, and 6 years for a fifth violation or subsequent violation. Under the House version, a person is not eligible for driving privileges without an ignition interlock until the person has completed rehabilitation and has submitted verification of no detectable use of alcohol or controlled substances while driving the vehicle. So this is the no drop behind the wheel provision in the House. The Senate is requiring total abstinence and not just while driving. The Senate is also allowing other chemical monitoring devices approved by DPS. Section 9 on the House side is on R6 and continues on to R7. This is amending the list of violations that trigger plate impoundment, and the House is adding test refusal. The Senate does not add first-time test refusal, but it is lowering the BAC that would trigger an impoundment for a first-time offense from 0.20 down to 0.15. Section 9 on the Senate side starts on R7, but it's mostly on R8 at the very top. This is a Senate-only provision which prohibits DWI vehicle forfeitures if a person becomes a participant in the ignition interlock program. Section 10 on the House side is on R8 and continues to R9. This relates to restricted licenses and B cards. In Subdivision 1, the House is striking the current gross misdemeanor for a B-car violation or a violation of an alcohol or controlled substance license restriction. The Senate does not have this. Both the Senate and the House are creating a misdemeanor penalty for a person who holds a restricted license, ignition interlock license, but operates a vehicle without an ignition interlock. And then the House also has a provision, Subdivision 3, that the Senate doesn't have, This authorizes the removal of the no alcohol notation from the B card. If a person has had no license violations or impaired driving violations for 10 years, a duplicate driver's license would no longer show the no alcohol restriction on the license card, and this subdivision also classifies the no alcohol restriction on the record as private data. Section 11 on the house side is on R9. This deals with limited licenses. The house side is authorizing limited licenses for first-time offenders with a BAC of less than 0.20 and then third-time and subsequent offenders who would be on ignition in the law. The Senate is allowing for more first-time offenders to receive a limited license, including test refusers, those under 21, and those convicted of a DWI offense. And then they are also here lowering the BAC threshold to 0.15. Section 12 on the House side is on R10. It starts at the bottom of R10 and goes on to R11. This is shortening the hard revocation period from 90 to 30 days for a limited license for third time and subsequent offenders, and then limits the 15-day revocation period to first time offenders only. The Senate Section 12 is eliminating the waiting periods completely for repeat offenders, and a first time offender who chooses to get a limited license rather than go on ignition interlock would continue to have a 15-day hard rev. Section 13 on the House side on page R11 and Section 13 on the Senate side are identical provisions that it's a technical change. Section 14 on the House and Senate side, it starts on R11 and goes all the way to R16. This is the ignition interlock program, and this provision is eliminating the current pilot project and creating a permanent program. And I'm just going to focus on the differences here. On page R12, in subdivision 2, there is a Senate-only provision. It's in the revisor side-by-side. It's on the Senate side at 11.7. This is mandating DPS to require ignition interlock device manufacturers to include in a contract a provision which would limit the manufacturer, what the manufacturer can recover from a participant who is not paying for costs. And under this section, the manufacturer would be barred from recovering, servicing, or monitoring costs. Moving to subdivision 4 is where the next change is. That's on page R14. There's a house-only provision in paragraph A. It starts on 12.33. Paragraph A in the House side is directing DPS to require participants to provide proof of insurance before going on ignition in the law. The Senate side also has a Senate-only provision in paragraph A, and on the Senate side it starts on 12.20, and this would allow program participants to operate employer-owned vehicles in certain limited circumstances. House paragraphs B, C, and D are establishing hard revocation periods before a person can seek a license with an ignition interlock restriction, and the Senate has no waiting periods. The next changes and differences are in subdivision 6. Which is on R15. Subdivision 6 is creating penalties for tampering with an ignition interlock device. It's also creating a misdemeanor penalty for knowingly loaning, renting, or leasing a vehicle not equipped with ignition interlock to a person with a restricted license. The House has language that requires that the person loaning the vehicle also know of the ignition interlock restriction. The Senate does not contain this language. Both the House and the Senate also provide that these penalties do not apply if the action was taken for an emergency purpose and the person with the restricted license did not operate the vehicle. The Senate contains the same language, but it consolidates the exception in the same paragraph as tampering and applies it to tampering only. The next difference is subdivision 8 on the House side. It's on R16. Subdivision 8 on the House side, it's a House-only provision. It is increasing the lockout threshold from 0.20 BAC to a 0.05 BAC beginning January 1st, 2013. Subdivision 9 on the House side and Subdivision 8 on the Senate are identical except for specific subdivision references. This deals with rulemaking. Section 15 on the House and Section 15 on the Senate are identical provisions. Section 16 in the House deals with rulemaking. It is identical with Section 16 on the Senate side except for a cross-reference. And then finally, Section 17 on the House side, which is on R17. These are identical repealers in the House and Senate. And that's it.
Okay. Any members have questions regarding the side-by-side? No? Okay. Is there anybody from the department or anybody in the audience that would like to give public comment or just advice in general on the bill?
Well, Madam Chair,
yeah.
I would like to hear from the Department of Public Safety about the their interpretation of the two bills in regards to the enhancement provisions and the level of enhancements, the 0.15 difference versus the 0.2, and the number of people that we are going to exclude from the program if we take the House language in that regard.
Sure, Mr. Chair. If the department would come up and answer Senator Murphy's question, please.
Okay.
If you could state your name for the record, too.
Yes, my name is Jean Ryan. I work for the Department of Public Safety in the Office of Traffic Safety. And regarding Senator Murphy's question on how many people, if it was changed from the difference between 0.20 and 0.15, how many people fall into that category? It's approximately 6,000 people per year that fall into that particular category. And I just appreciate, actually, your request to have us comment on that 0.15 alcohol concentration and why that is a significant and important alcohol concentration to actually require somebody to be placed on an ignition interlock device. One of the things that this morning, and I kind of dug something up. It's from the Century Council, and in case people don't know who the Century Council is, it is a actually national committee that comprised of the board members are Allied D'Amique, Spirits and Wines, the Americas, Bacardi Martini, Brown-Forman Beverages Worldwide, Guinness, Hublin, Joseph Seagram and Sons, and Mont Hennessy. It's basically a board of the alcohol industry. And besides the alcohol industry, Governor's Highway Safety Administration, National Highway Safety Administration, they all define hardcore drunk drivers as 0.15 alcohol concentration and above, first-time offenders at 0.15 alcohol concentration above, and a repeat DWI offender. One of the things that they've done is they did a document called Combating Hardcore Drunk Driving, and this was done by the Century Council with well-known researchers were involved in it, and it was funded by the Century Council, and they came up with the definition of hardcore drunk driver as 0.15 and above. And I just wanted to read from you one little comment about one segment. It's like kind of a handout of how they define point one, hardcore drunk drivers, excuse me. Hardcore drunk drivers are not those who consume alcohol in moderation and who respect the limits of the law. Hardcore drunk drivers are irresponsible, reckless, and abnormal in their drinking patterns and subsequent behavior on the road. To reach a BAC of 0.15, a man weighing 176 pounds would have to consume seven drinks in 1 hour. Drivers with a BAC of 0.15 or above are 200 times more likely to be involved in a fatal crash than an average non-drinking driver. There's more to this, but I think it actually supports the significance of why a 0.15 alcohol concentration is a smart, very well-supported alcohol concentration where these people should be on an ignition interlock, and that's what we're asking them to be on.
Ms. Ryan, is it possible for you to provide a copy of that to
Yeah, I actually brought copies.
Yeah, not the whole book.
No.
The statement.
I didn't bring the whole book.
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Ms. Ryan, you said 6,000 per year. What's the percent increase when you go from 0.20 to 0.15? How many are we speaking of? You say 6,000 additional people out of how many?
Oh, out of about 32 to 35,000 per year. Excuse me.
Representative Drazkowski.
Ms. Ryan, what is the average blood alcohol content for the average arrest?
It's the average alcohol concentration is 0.16.
Mm-hmm. So, Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy.
But
thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Ms. Ryan, so we're going to miss a large section of people who actually need to be on this device if we put the limit at 0.2 instead of 0.15, is that correct?
Senator Murphy, yes. I think what we're trying to do, what the intent of this bill when we started our committee was to actually reduce alcohol-related fatalities and severe injuries and increase legal driving. What we know is the portion of those people that are involved in an alcohol-related crash, fatality crash, significantly increases at a 0.15 alcohol concentration. These are this is a segment of people that nobody, I think, going into the committee when we worked on it, thought that they should actually be looking at. But when you look at the data, these are 6,000 people. We're not really taking away their driver's privileges any longer. We're asking them to go on ignition interlock to improve public safety on the roadway. And I think it's a real fair way to make sure the roads are safe, and it also provides a means of legal driving for those people that are arrested at DWI that are high-risk DWI offenders.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Ms. Ryan, maybe we can talk a little bit about the B card. I don't know if you're the expert on that at the department, but maybe somebody here is. And the reason why I bring those two issues up first, the difference between the 0.15 and 0.20 and the B card, is those are the big differences in the two bills. Everybody knows it. The Senate felt that the B card, by expand, the Thomas-Oney Amendment was voted down on the Senate floor, and the Thomas-Oney Amendment is kind of like what the House has in their bill that says that after 10 years, if you prove that you're, you know, not using alcohol, we'll take the B card off, but the limitation still survives. But after we talked about it a little bit, we decided that probably wasn't a good idea, basically because the people that are on B cards got on B cards for a good reason, and maybe the department or Ms. McCormick can explain how many times a person has to violate to get on the B card, and what the average B card holder, what their alcohol consumption looked like at one time.
Ms. McCormick. So if you could state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. I'm not sure that I would, I don't have statistics on what the average, are you asking the average number of violations a B card holder has? I don't think we have those kinds of statistics.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Ms. McCormick, what I was looking for was somebody that could tell us kind of what a B card holder looked like.
Oh.
They had been on a restricted license because of they had 5-6 offenses and they're heavy drinkers.
Madam Chair and Senator Murphy and members of the committee, yes, a B card holder is an individual who has had multiple violations of alcohol for impaired driving, and that individual, as a result, has to sign as part of the process, has to sign a statement that says they will not have a drop of alcohol, and then they have to serve lengthy revocation periods. And that information is put on the driver's license on the restrictions on the back of the card. And so that would be the type of individuals that would have a B card.
Ms. McCormick, from the testimony and the meetings that we've had regarding this topic, and I can, I know you have a question, and I'll get to you, but this is also something that Representative Drazkowski has been working on, but it's 3 years, DWI convictions in 10 years,
yes.
Four in a lifetime,
sorry.
Will
Correct.
Get you a B card. The House had a concern that, one, this wasn't even legislation passed back in the day. This was something that the department had arbitrarily decided a long time ago. We're one of the only, we are, I think, the only state that does this, with at least, I think, in general, but for certain, probably with rule. So if anything, it probably would have came from legislation in another state. But Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Ms. McCormick. So the folks on the B card, they're multiple offenders. And is there any statistical data that shows that multiple offenders are the ones at higher blood alcohol concentrations, more likely to not only reoffend but get in crashes as well? Or Ms. Ryan?
Yeah.
Representative Ryan? Ms. Ryan, sorry.
Senator Murphy. People that are third-time offenders, they do reoffend. About 50% of them will reoffend. What it does is it, the first-time offenders reoffend at a slightly lower rate, especially on a lower alcohol concentration level. As it increases, there's about 50%. So it's a third-time offender, 50% of them go on to be a fourth. Fourth, it maintains to be about a 50% rate. But as far as being involved in an alcohol-related crash, it is actually significant as well that it's a first-time offender actually is highly involved in alcohol-related crash.
We have right down the line here, but I also would say that if somebody was on the Ignition Lock program, they still, according to the House's position, would not be able to still drink and drive. So just want to put that on there. Representative Drazkowski. We'll just go down the line here. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Ryan, help us maybe draw a picture of where things are at in the House language now. As I understand it, we're going to be, with the House language the way it is, we've got essentially, if you're on your third or more violations, you're essentially submitting to abstinence while driving for 10 years. Is that what we have in the House language?
Ms. Ryan.
Representative Bigham, Representative Drazkowski, yes, that's true. That it is.
Representative Drazkowski.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Ryan, now, does that, it seems to me that coincides with a lot of the studies. Someone from the department at one point said that if we can get people not driving drunk for 10 years, statistics tell us some very good things. Can you elaborate on what that is?
Ms. Ryan?
Representative Bigham, Representative Drazkowski. Yes, what we did is we we watched or we evaluated people that after a 10-year time period, the 90% of the people that were going to offend, 90% of them have reoffended after a 10-year time period. Currently, though, it is requirement of abstinence in and out of the vehicle. The segment of people that we've been doing research on.
Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Ruskowski, that's a point that I want to make. The program is not a drop right now, and that's where the research is. And so the research is on not a drop program. It's not on this very lenient program that is in the House bill.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, Representative Cornish, and then both of you have the question too, so we're all on the list.
When the chair was describing the origination of the bill here, the D-card, and then talked about where it came from and how it was, and in comparison to other states, you got kind of confused, looking at your face and act like you wanted to say something. What did you want to say about the origination of this, where it came from, and our comparison to other states?
Ms. McCormick?
Madam Chair and Representative Cornish, thank you. What I wanted to say was that there was rulemaking that was done, so this wasn't arbitrary. This was a decision, and it was done through rulemaking in terms of having this offender sign a statement that would say not a drop, and the fact that they wouldn't be able to get a limited license and those kinds of issues. So there was department rulemaking that gives us the authority currently to do what we're doing.
And the follow-up would be what are we one of the only states that does this?
Yeah. Madam Chair and members of the committee, yes, we are.
My question, thank you, Madam Chair. My question is a follow-up to that. I guess I'm curious about the success of the B-card. We know people that are hardcore drinkers that have already been picked up for a 3 and 4 violation certainly drink much heavier and drive more often than they're caught. And so I'm wondering, do you have any data about the folks that have historically been given the B-card? Are they still drinking? Are they still driving? Is it really making a difference? And what kind of data do you have to show that that would be any more or less successful than what the House is proposing?
Ms. Ryan.
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, we don't. I mean, 50% of them reoffend. We know that. And what we have done in the past, and that's why we decided we needed to take a serious look at what our administrative license sanctions, what we've done in the past is take away their driving privileges for a longer period of time. And what we've experienced is we know there's about 40,000 conviction of driving after withdrawal violations. And so based on that, we feel that there is a need, we're hoping that Ignition Interlock provides that means of a monitoring the person's drinking and driving, and provides the ability for them to get to drive their car, because to get to where they need to go.
And that actually gets to the point, which is once we have the Ignition Interlock in place, it is the regulator for these folks. And so I guess I would say it in some respects negates a plan that we've been using, the B-card, that hasn't been successful. I would say that the House, I guess at this point, I'm not convinced that the House's language, when it's linked to Ignition Interlock, isn't strong, but that's not.
Senator Rosen.
Actually, I'd like to defer to Senator Latz first.
Okay, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along these lines, I guess a little bit of clarification, because Representative Ruskowski asked about the B-card restriction going away under the House provision. As I'm reading the language in the House bill, the restriction itself does not go away. The abstinence condition currently applies when you've had the requisite number of priors, and you promise, as a condition of getting your license reinstated, after having proven abstinence and gone through rehab and everything, that you'll never drink again, whether or not you get behind the wheel. And as I see the House provision, which I think is identical in language to the amendment that Senator Tomasoni offered and withdrew before final vote on, was that the notation on the driving plastic license would be removed upon application, but that the abstinence condition would remain in effect for the rest of the life of the driver. And the concern about the abstinence, the notation on the plastic, was that it's kind of like a scarlet letter. Anyone who's using a driver's license for an ID for something ends up becoming obvious if they've got a history of alcohol problems, and they have absolutely no relevance to why they're showing the driver's license. But the abstinence condition would remain in effect, whether they're currently driving on an ignition interlock or whether they're driving just on the B card without an ignition interlock or anything like that. Is that, maybe Ms. Ryan's kind of squinting, I don't think you're reading the provision the same way that I am, but that's the way the side-by-side describes it. I think the way the language in the bill says.
Senator Lex, I'll have staff answer that.
Madam Chair and members, Senator Latz is correct in his reading of that subdivision 3 and section 10 on the House side, but the House also has a provision in section 8, which is on R6, and on line 6.5, it states that the person has to submit verification of no detectable use of alcohol while driving, whereas if you look on the Senate side, they have to submit verification of abstinence. And I think that's where our differences may be.
Can you point that out?
Yep, page R6.
I'm sorry.
I'm on R6, so the revisor side, I guess.
What line?
On the House, it's on 6.5.
That's as a condition of what?
Madam Chair,
reinstatement.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator, if you look above on the beginning of subdivision 4, it describes a person whose driver's license has been canceled or denied as a result of 3 or more qualified driving incidences, and they cannot be eligible for reinstatement. And my understanding is that would be the B card holders right now, and they would need to submit a verification of no detectable use of alcohol while driving on the House side. And the Senate has the abstinence requirement on line 5.20.
So you're saying, I'm sorry, if they're canceled and denied and inimical to public safety, which is what happens before you get a B card, and you've been on in the ignition interlock while you've been canceled and denied as inimical to public safety because you've met the program requirements, then before you can get reinstated with a B card, the House is saying you got to show no detectable use on the ignition interlock. Is that where this condition is kicking in?
Mm-hmm.
And the Senate side is saying you have to prove abstinence, which is the current standard?
Madam Chair, yeah, I believe that's correct.
Okay, so we're dealing with condition of reinstatement after you've been canceled and denied an interval. And that's where there's a difference in the House and the Senate.
Right. Senator Latch, I was just saying no detectable use of alcohol while driving. But if I was on the ignition lock and had drinks but was not driving and Ms. Pierce was driving me home, that's acceptable. I think that's where the difference is. And Myra, Representative Drazkowski?
I'm wondering if staff can clarify this for sure, but thank you, Madam Chair. What I understood, Senator, with the House language collectively to say is that at least for the third, fourth, and fifth time offenders, for the third time offenders, it would be 3 years that they'd be on ignition interlock. And rather than having the B card language that is on there now, there would be similar notations on the card, only the language and the notation would change and say something like, ignition interlock restricted during that 3 years that they're on ignition interlock. And then there would be an additional 7 years during which they would not have an location on the license, but it would be on the record that they have that abstinence from alcohol while driving for a full amount of 10 years. So 3 years on ignition interlock with it on the card, 7 years with it not on the card, but on the record, and during the time at which they agree, or they would be required to have demonstrated abstinence from alcohol while driving. Then for the fourth year, it's 4 years of ignition interlock, and then 6 years of abstinence while driving for a total of 10. Fifth year, it's 6 years of ignition interlock, and then 4 years of abstinence while driving for a total of 10.
So abstinence only while driving, but they could be drinking elsewhere?
Yeah.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay, and then after that 10-year period is up? Pardon?
If they have no violations.
If they have no violations, then...
Then the abstinence restriction goes away? Mm-hmm. So they can drink again as much as they want? Mm-hmm. Anywhere, anytime, as long as they're not doing an ECWI?
Senator...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Wait, hold on, Senator, sorry. Ms. McCormick, did you have something to add?
Ms. Madam Chair, I was just talking to Ms. Ryan because it is still on the record, the driving record. It's not taken off of the driving record.
So
that driving history, the driving history is still on there.
Okay. Senator Rosen, I'm sorry.
Just 2 points. Just one statement is that has anybody ever talked to anybody that's had the B card that perhaps having that notification on the back has deterred them from earlier drinking, has helped them to abstain from alcohol. And my second question is, why do we want to do this? I mean, I'm really having a hard time grasping why we would. I mean, where did the impetus come from, this B card? I mean, is it a civil rights issue, or is it just a...
I'm going to go with Chair Hillstrom, and then I'll go back to Representative Drazkowski.
Madam Chair, this is an amendment that has been offered on the House floor every single year since I've got to the legislature, and it passes every single year. And so Representative Drazkowski took this issue on, and rather than having the policy eliminated by amendment on the House floor, he decided to really work on the issue, work with the department, get some input from stakeholders. And what constantly comes up in the discussion on the House floor is story after story of folks who are not driving, who it has been 10 years, 20 years since their last EWI, and they are at a barbecue drinking a beer, and they get a B-card violation. So my question to the department was going to be, what percentage of violations of the B-card are for non-driving behavior?
Ms. Ryan?
I'm trying to do a calculation here. Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom. We actually did do. We did calculate this. We didn't do a percentage, but I'm trying to remember this number. I apologize. I can get back to you. It's not a large number, actually. It was a pretty significantly low number of people that are they violate because it's a B card violation. It's not a DWI arrest that puts them in the situation that they lose their driving privileges. But I can get you exact numbers, and I wouldn't want to misrepresent anything.
And Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and to the House conferees, and this is what's puzzling to me. Why would we want to loosen the restrictions and laws on people who have been, who have basically been categorized as a menace to society by the Department of Public Safety? If you have a menace on the highway, which that's what this subdivision 10 and 171.040 is, talks about this word that Senator Latch uses that Senator Frederickson and I had to look up to find out what it meant. But in whatever, what's the word, Senator Latch?
Canceled by the United States inimical to public safety.
Yeah, that's it. That word means menace. Now, I understand menace. And after 3 DWIs, and most of these people have alcohol issues. They don't need to be drinking any time of the day, night, weekend, whatever. And if that's part of their agreement for them to get a restricted driver's license, to have that the pleasure of being back on the road, then so be it. I don't think that the Senate, you know, and I misspoke earlier when I said that we voted down the B-card amendment. It got withdrawn because it got thoroughly lambasted on the floor, and all the conferees on our side, except for me, are the ones that were doing the lambasting. So you have to understand where we're at on this. These are people who have proven to be menaces to society. A very small portion of them are the ones that are being tabbed for back in the backyard around the barbecue. So why are we wanting to help the vast majority of those people who are the ones that are behind the wheel creating the problems? I don't understand that.
Senator Orton? Yeah, Rosen. I almost called you.
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, have we seen this B-card amendment before on the floor ever in my last 8 years? I don't believe we have.
Yes.
It's never been a bill. It's always been an amendment. And I don't remember having the debate that we had on the floor over this issue. So I have a short-term memory.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I don't remember it ever being as wild as it was on the other day when we passed the bill.
Okay. Senator Letts?
Madam Chair, to that point, when I was in the House my first 2 years, at the same time you came into the Senate, I think. This provision, the Senate amendment that Senator Tomasoni wanted to add, did become law. Representative Eakin carried it in the House. Mm-hmm. I actually testified with him on it in front of the House committee, but it was sunset. So for a year and a half, you could get your notation removed from the plastic license, but the abstinence condition still remained. It was still a condition. You couldn't drink alcohol anywhere, anytime, but your plastic license wouldn't show that to the world. That sunsetted and went away. I think it was a year and a half, 2 years later. So both bodies have passed that particular provision. I don't remember it being, well, there was a debate on the House floor when I was there over this issue. I don't know.
Representative Hilstrom.
Madam Chair, where this tends to be heard from a lot on the House floor is in rural Minnesota. When someone gets their multiple DWIs when they're a young person and then grows up, it's been 20 years, it's been 30 years, they've since moved on with their life and they go to a backyard barbecue and they are no longer able to have a beer. And so those are the stories that we hear repeatedly on the House floor. That's how we end up with it every year.
Senator Murphy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Hilstrom, I understand your conundrum, I suppose. You know, a lot of times those anecdotal instances seem to hold more weight than actual facts and figures. And we understand where you're at.
Madam Chair. Okay. Representative Hilstrom, then we have Norton and Drazkowski.
I look forward to getting the facts and figures about what number of folks have not gotten their violation for non-driving behavior, because I think that would shed some light for all of us.
Yeah, and the department said that was kind of low, so.
Representative Norton.
Well, I was just kind of reiterate the same thing. Representative Hilstrom said, I'd love to have more data on this particular issue. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of it out there to be had, either on both sides of the issue, people getting picked up, again, multiple offenses, as well as the other side. But also, I believe that the criminal system also can deal with this issue. And so there's the driving portion that we're talking about, but there's also the criminal portion that the offender is going to go, and if the judge feels this person needs abstinence, needs treatment, needs more, it could be handled in that manner too for really hardcore repeat offenders.
And that's what I was going to point out to Representative Drazkowski and then Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just maybe reiterate that we don't know of another state that has a B-card, has a B-card policy, and we've got about 43 or 47 states now that have ignition interlock. We would be essentially putting together dual tracks of abstinence, one being abstinence while you're in your 10 years if you're a third or more offender, and the other being the B card if we kept it. talked to a good number of people who have contacted me and have said, you know, I think of one particularly up in Representative Leader's district who contacted me. He said, you know, I've had absolutely no driving problems for the last 10 years. I hadn't had a drop of alcohol, and he at one point had one drink and got nailed, and the V-card kicked in, lost his license, and he's a recovered alcoholic. And you know, we do believe in redemption and rehabilitation in Minnesota, and you know, second chances. The 10-year period does match up with, I think, what we understand to be the period during which if people demonstrate abstinence during that period, a large number of them don't come back and reoffend. So it makes a lot of sense to me.
Okay, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just two things. One is, one issue we talked about on the floor was the liability for, like, bar owners, for them to be able to have, knowingly that on that the back of that license, they should not serve that person, and they could be in there. So this could be a liability issue for any restaurant bar. It could be. And so, and the other issue is that Senator Latz was right, but I'd like some clarification from counsel on if the Senate had ever their memory on the SB card in the Senate.
Madam Chair, members, I was talking to Senator Rosen before. My memory is that I think this has always been a little bit more predominantly of a House issue. I know it's come up on the House floor a lot. I don't really remember it discussed too much in the Senate. I don't think there's really bills that ever progress through the Senate chamber. I'm not positive of this, but I think that the incident Senator Latz was referred to a couple of years ago where we took the, with the sunset provision, the V-card language, I think that was something that maybe the House had coming into conference committee, and we accepted in conference committee. So I don't think it's something that went through the Senate process, but it did become law for that period.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Any other comments from staff? Anybody else would like to comment at all on the bill?
Yeah.
Okay, Senator Lance.
I'm sorry. I had a question for the department with regard to the hard revocation.
Sure.
Provisions. I just want to make sure, maybe it's for counsel. Are there any hard revocations in here when someone accepts the ignition and lock? Or
yes. Ms. Ryan?
Yes, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, on the House side, it remains the hard revocation. On the Senate side, the hard revocation, it's a shortened hard revocation. It's the 15 or 30 days on the House side. On the Senate side, it's 15 days only if they do not go on ignition or lock and their alcohol concentration is level is under 0.15 and they get a limited license. Then there is that 15-day hard revocation time period.
Okay. So, if I understand it right, then on the Senate side, if they accept ignition interlock, there's no hard revocation at all, correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Letts, correct.
And what's the department's position on that issue?
Ms. Ryan.
We would be willing to accept, I mean, that we don't have an issue with that.
Okay. Senator Murphy?
Yeah, Madam Chair, well, I can kind of, here's just my perception, and maybe I'm wrong here, but the Senate bill, I think the differences between the two bills can be kind of summarized this way. The Senate bill tries to provide a little bit of allowance for those first-time folks. You know, we do take that enhancement and lower it down to 0.15, whereas the House is at 0.2. But on the first ones, we try to be a little more lenient. You come into the program, full driving privileges, right down the line. But we do leave that little escape clause open for the 15-day, you know, sit beside the road and thumb a ride thing, or the interlock program. So it's a little bit easier in that regard. And then it gets a little bit tougher as you go through the system. It appears that the House bill is a little tougher on the first-time DWI people because they don't have that split, and ours didn't have that either until we went through committee. And then it's basically the same stuff up until we get to the B card people, and then there's that issue between the bodies on the B card, and we'll have to see what washes out. But it looked like the Senate bill was a little bit, it wasn't as strong on the front end for first-time offenders, but it got stronger as it went, and the House bill was a little stronger up front, and then on the B card thing got a little weaker.
Senator Carlson?
Madam Chair, and someone from the department, I don't want to get my head around this this likelihood of reoffending after having the B card. I think I heard you say that it's a 90% chance in the first 10 years of having a B card that the person that's going to reoffend has. And does that mean by subtraction that 10% of the people who have had it for 10 years will eventually reoffend also?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, correct. 10% reoffend after 10-year time period.
Mm-hmm. But Madam Chair, Ms. Ryan, I think Senator Carlson, were you asking that 90% of the people on the B card reoffend?
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh.
Oh no. See,
no.
And that's it's 10%.
No, I'm sorry. It's 90% of the 50% reoffend.
Correct.
During the 10 years.
Right. Yep.
Right.
There you go.
Yep. Okay. Any other questions from members? Representative Duskowski and then Representative Cornish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Ryan, other states that have this, are there other states that have a 10-year total abstinence while driving window? And if so, what is their reoffense rate for those that have ignition error?
Ms. Ryan?
Madam Chair, Representative Duskowski, boy, you know what the recidivism reoffense rate of other states are, it's very hard to say because they don't keep really good records, you know. What we do know about other states' laws, they're really all over the book. I mean, some states will never give you a license back. Florida, on your third offense, you're not getting a driver's license ever in that state. So there's states that they don't have a B card, but they say you're never going to get a driver's license either. So each law is so in every state's law is so unique that it's really hard to say, you know, this is this state's experience. I think there really isn't anybody that could answer you that. What we do know about ignition interlock is that ignition interlock is very effective while it's on the vehicle. And once it's removed, people reoffend again, unless they change their drinking behavior if they're chemically dependent. That's why it's so important to couple ignition interlock with some other behavior modification, education, or treatment, or any other kind of program that will encourage behavior change.
Representative Cornish, then Senator Rosen, then Representative Hilstrom.
Madam Chair, just a comment from my Senate counterparts on being easy on first-time offenders. You don't have to worry about that too much, about being harder on the first-time offender. The first-time offender, in actuality, is probably driven home, collateral, scores of times by the time they catch the first time. And it's just as dangerous as the first-time offender, just as deadly on the road as the third or fourth-time offender. So in your consideration, when we're going back and forth, mm-hmm. you're always worried much about being harder on first-time offenders.
Sure. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Ryan, I guess my question is going to the ignition interlock and the manufacturers, and how many various manufacturers are there, do you know of, that would provide this device in the state?
Ms. Ryan.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, we have four companies that are certified to do business here in Minnesota. However, there are states that have nine that have, you know, even a little bit more than that, but I think about nine other companies are pretty major companies in the industry. But in Minnesota right now, we do have four that are certified.
Okay. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you believe that the minute this is implemented, that we will have enough dealers or manufacturers, whoever can do it, that we can actually comply with folks that choose the ignition interlock will have no hard revocation period because they'll be able to get it installed immediately.
Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative Hillstrom, the department will have to go through an RFP process in order to have the vendors be certified by the department. So we would certainly, in that kind of a process, I'm sure I would, I mean, I'm just guessing that most of the vendors that Ms. Ryan is talking about would probably be part of that process, but we won't know until that happens, and this program doesn't go into effect until next year, so that would give us enough time to be able to get through that RFP process.
So anyone who gets a DWI from the time we pass the law and it goes into effect to the time that you implement would not be eligible for the admission interlock then, or that's currently going on and it would be through pilot, or how would that work?
Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative Hillstrom, yes, we currently have a pilot that is operated throughout the state, and we're bringing new participants on a daily basis right now. We're over 900 participants in the state right now.
Any final further comments?
I think that we do have the room.
We've got the room on the election.
Okay. My inclination is to go ahead and recess to the call of the chair, but will not meet any time before 2. That gives people time to talk and figure some stuff out as to offers and stuff. So with that, if there's any comment about that, with that, we're in recess till the call of the chair.
Hey, if you guys take the Senate bill right now, we'll be done.